This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There we go. James Hamm, the insiders and the Kings beat. Here on D'Lo and KC. And James, I was just talking about some of the things that me and Jesse were just talking about, some of the things we're excited to see. And we got on the topic of Kevin Huerter and whether or not he would start and everything like that. I think him coming off the bench is perfect for both parties. I think Kevin Huerter having less on his plate to deal with, being a guy off the bench, like when you're a starter, it's like, all right, I got to make sure I'm making my shots. And then I got to make sure, you know, I'm working the pick and roll the right way. And I got to make sure, you know, I'm also guarding Devin Booker and all this. Like, it's a lot. And I think at this point, he might be best suited to be off, come off the bench, be a guy that spreads the floor, make sure your offense is on point. That's probably more your focal point is your offense. And if you're hitting, we keep you on. If not, you know, we'll try again later. But I think it simplifies things for both parties. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I definitely think that there is some like accuracy to what you're saying. I like the idea of Kevin Huerter coming off the bench, and I like the idea of Keon Ellis starting. I think like the mental aspect of it, like always being a starter and not being able to adjust. I mean, it's like there's a reality there that we don't know how he's going to handle that if that's in fact what happens. But at the same time, I also like. For as much as we sort of talk about this, like I always feel like Kevin Huerter gets devalued a little bit here. Mm. And it's not that we're intentionally doing it. It's just, I think that we all have an opinion and, you know, I think a lot of our opinions kind of line up that we like the idea of a defensive minded guy in the starting lineup with the other four guys. Mm-hmm. And again, that's, I don't think it's a knock on Kevin Huerter as much as it is, you know, like sort of a reality of the situation. He missed major time last year at the end of the season, and it opened the door for somebody to step up and show not just like how good he can be, but what kind of impact he can have on the team and on winning. Mm-hmm. And so Keon Ellis has kind of like created a little bit of this, and not by talking about it and not by saying he wants to be the starter, he deserves to be the starter, but by going out and doing the things that this team needs. Mm-hmm. And it's not that Kevin doesn't do the things that this team needs. It's just that Keon is different and he specializes on the defensive end and this team needs that. I'd also point out, it's a really good thing to have like seven guys who should be starting. Mm-hmm. And it just is. I mean, this is a really good thing for Mike Brown to have to work out that you have Malik Monk, who is good enough to be a starter, that you have Kevin Huerter, who's good enough to be a starter. Keon Ellis, good enough to be a starter. like all of these guys are quality players. And the more quality you have, the better depth you have, the more quality of depth that you have, the better you're going to be in the long run. And so I'm intrigued to see how it all plays out. I'm intrigued to see Kevin get back on the floor. But until he does that, we're just kind of left with this, you know, pontificating over it, not sure what's going to happen. We have to wait and see what exactly the final decision is and a final product is here when the Kings open up against Minnesota.
Well, to that point, though, too, James, like I'm always hesitant to say this kind of stuff because I don't want to put players in a box. But, you know, Kevin Huerter could start in this league, clearly, you know, for a good team. Malik Monk could start clearly for a good team in this league. But they might be best off the bench for this team. And that goes to what you were talking about as far as the talent level. These guys are legit starters. Like, they have the talent to start. Their best roles for this team is coming off the bench. And that just means the five guys that are starting for you, the roster is legit eight deep, like, of guys that you think could probably start in this league, right? Like, I think he has started. I don't know if it was a good team, but Trey Lyles has started in this league. He started, you know, for the Pistons and the Spurs, I think, and was a solid player, like 10 points per game, 6-7 rebounds. Like, he wasn't bad at all, so he could start too. But you got now three guys coming off the bench that are capable starters. I mean, that just adds to the depth, man. That's like you said, that's a great sign.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And the other thing I would point out too is, like, look, for as much as we, like, again, you and I, Kenny, as much as we have talked about the idea of Keon Ellis, like, we have to remember that one of the major questions about this team is whether Domantas Sabonis and DeMar DeRozan, you know, what that's going to do to the spacing on the floor, what that's going to do to sort of the ability to move the ball on the system. And, like, there's no question that Kevin Huerter's, like, movement off ball and that his play style might lend itself to being the best offensive fit for this team with the starting unit. Mm-hmm. And, like, so I'm not willing to say that this is just Keon Ellis's job to lose or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I definitely understand what Kevin brings to the floor and what he brings to a lineup that has DeRozan and Sabonis. Mm-hmm. And what you want is not just an elite three-point shooter that shoots three or four threes a game, but an elite three-point shooter in the past who can shoot six or seven threes a game and who draws a crowd every single time he comes off the screen. Mm. And so that has value to it. And so, again, like, this is a really, really difficult situation to be in if you're Mike, but it's also a good situation. Yeah. Like, this is what coaching is about. This is what coaching high-level players and expensive players, guys who make lots of money. This is what it's about. You've got to make the tough decisions, and you have to do what's best for everybody. Yeah. And that goes for Kevin, that goes for Keon, but it goes for the other, you know, eight guys, seven guys that might be in the rotation. You have to do what's best for the collective and put your team in the best situation to win. And so we're going to see what he thinks is the best situation to win. And we can continue to question that all year long. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just going to depend. If they're winning, then it'll quiet everything and we won't even hear about this. Right. If they're not winning and they have to make changes, this thing could come up, you know, two or three times during this season.
Yeah. No. And so the thing about it is, this will be the third time that I've brought him up in the week, but Mike Brown has a situation where he's got to figure out who to play, and he's got these tough decisions to make. I think poor Luke Walton would trade places with him any day. We were talking about Luke's tenure the other day, and we were kind of going through it, and we're like, are there only, like, three guys still in the league that he coached? This was, like, 3 years ago. It's like Fox, Buddy Hield. Who was the other one?
Harrison. Marvin's
hanging on by a thread. He's hanging on by a thread.
Is Corey Joseph out of the league?
That's tough. We'd have to check the waiver wire.
I think Kojo's in the league. Yeah, I mean that's
but think about, like, he had those three guys and everybody else is hanging on by a thread.
Yeah, bogey. Yeah, it's one of those things that I talked about, like how we look at a coach's legacy or how we look at player legacies and stuff like that. I will still contend, you know, a lot of people like don't like Luke Walton as a head coach and all that stuff. I'll just contend, like, look at the team he had in his first year. Look at the team he had as a second year. Look at the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Look at how many other coaches lost their jobs. I mean, Frank Vogel won a championship in the bubble and then got fired the next year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a weird time, but the same time, like, he loses Bogdanovich. He loses Alex Len and Kent Bazemore. Mm-hmm. And they replaced all of those three people with a rookie Tyrese Halliburton with Hassan Whiteside and with Glenn Robinson III. Like, yeah, he didn't have the players. And then if you look at that season specifically, that's a year that they tell Nemanja Bjelica, hey, look, you're not going to be the starter anymore. And then he doesn't want to play there anymore. Right. And so you're down to like five NBA players maybe on that roster. And he's got to go into a season and try to win games. And like, there aren't many coaches that were going to win games in that situation.
that was tough, man. But Mike Brown, it is an issue, you know, what Mike Brown is dealing with now, but it's just an issue that I'd rather have than the other issue.
Oh, no, I would definitely rather have the issue that Mike Brown has. And then, you know, and I think also, like, look, Mike's not going to have to deal with a lot of this. Like, injuries have kind of like taken the wind out of any like controversy, out of any like position battle, like, mm-hmm, completely. So we're going to have, he's going to have to figure out who's healthy on day one, and how a guy like, you know, Jordan McLaughlin, who hasn't played, you know, who hasn't ever worked with this team, how he's going to fit into the puzzle. And yeah, guys like, you know, like Kevin Huerter, but also Trey Lyles, like, when is Trey going to be back? Is he going to be back before the season starts? Mm-hmm. We don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, tough. James, you mentioned something about like the shooting and spreading the floor and stuff like that. And I think you were talking about Kevin Huerter, and you said, you know, maybe he's a guy that shoots, you know, if he's starting or and he's in the rotation consistently, shoots like seven threes a game or something like that. Earlier, I talked about Keegan Murray, and I was trying to figure out how many shots a game he might take this year. And I know when Malik Monk was out, I was asking him, Kyle Madsen was asking him, yo, you need 18 shot attempts a night. You know, that's what you need to do. He doesn't need to do that now with a healthy team, with DeRozan here. I think if he lived in that 11, 12 attempts a night range, he'd be good. But I was also thinking, like, the threes. Like, if he's 11 shot attempts a night, we're looking at like 6-7 threes a night from him.
Yeah, last season he averaged 6.3. I mean, 6.6. His rookie season he averaged 6.3 threes per game. I'd like to see that closer to 8, to be honest with you. And I think he's a guy that I want to see taking 12, 13 shots a game. Mm-hmm. But, like, we're going to keep going through this. Like, how many guys can you have? I mean, DeRozan shot 17 times per game last season. Sabonis is at 12 shots per game. And now Mike wants him taking an extra 2 to 4 three-pointers a game. You know, we start to run out of shots pretty quickly when you start to really look at all of this. And the one guy I don't want losing shots is Keegan. I think that in the right situation, in the right frame of mind, and I think he will be this season, he's a guy who easily can shoot 40% from three. And because of his size, you know, we're talking about a 6'8" guy who shoots taller than that, if that makes sense. I think he's a guy that, like, I need more from him still in order for him to take this next step in his development. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, again, I don't expect DeMar DeRozan to take 15 shots per game. I mean, to take 17 shots per game, I think it's more like 14, 15. But that's up from like the 8.6 shots per game that Harrison Barnes took at that same position last year. Right. So where are these extra shots coming from? Number one, it can come from better pace, and you can create more shots by speeding up the pace of the game. It can come from offensive rebounds and crashing the glass, which is something that's been the talk of of camp. If you can get three more possessions per game on the offensive side of the ball, that's three more shots for these guys to take. So I think there are ways to create extra shots. But at the end of the day, like, these shots have to come from somewhere, right? And so it's going to be probably the biggest intrigue that you have for this team this season is how do you balance it out? And I look at it a little bit like the 49ers offense. Like, you know, one night it's Juwan Jennings catching 150 yards. Next night it's Brandon Ayuk. And then there's Kittle catching for 100 yards. There's Debo catching for 120 yards. You know, that's not even with McCaffrey in the game. So, like, you're constantly trying to figure out who's going to be the hot hand that day. And in the NBA, it's a little bit different. But, like, the Kings need three or four hot hands every single night. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be opportunity here for these guys to score. And they're just going to have to figure out how to help each other out, how to feed each other. And I think that's kind of a good problem to have. Again, yeah. I'd rather have that than only having, like, two scorers and wondering where the points are coming from when one of those guys gets injured. But this is definitely, again, it's going to be part of the coaching problem that Mike has this year.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we talk about, you know, all the reports about the pace going up and all this other stuff. And it's twofold, right? Like, part of it is we're talking about, you know, they're trying to get back to the Beam Team One days and all this other stuff. The other part, which may be true, but the other part of it could be, like you just broke down, man, we got to find some more shots. You know, we got some great offensive weapons now. We got to find some more shots. So we need to get out in transition. We need to get on the offensive boards. And like you said, between those two, like if you pick up the pace and you get on the offensive boards, you might be able to find five more shots, you know, in a game, 5 to 7 more shots in a game because you were able to get on the offensive board. Maybe that's getting somebody to the foul line a little bit or something like that. But that could be the reason and probably is the reason for the emphasis on how they play offense a little bit. They got to find some shots for these guys.
Yeah. I think you've got to get creative. And I like the idea that they're going to try to go after, you know, the offensive glass. To me, you know, again, we talked to Mike about it the last couple of days. And it's something they're really pushing. It is a point of emphasis in camp that whoever steps on the court, if you're on, you know, if you're below the break, you're those corner spots, your job is to fly into the middle and crash a glass every single time. And they think that they can slow the opposing offense down just by like kind of clogging the lane and getting in the way and deflections and then getting some offensive rebounds. But I really look at the way that the Knicks have always beat up on the Kings. And whether they win or lose, the way the Knicks out-rebound the Kings has always been, like, startling. Mm. And a lot of that is because Josh Hart's one of, like, the best rebounding guards that we've seen in a long time. And I even think that that's part of the reason why the Kings circled Devin Carter in the draft. Because Devin Carter is by far the best rebounding guard in this draft. And, you know, he's a guy that probably can average 5 rebounds a game at the pro level. Who averaged 8 rebounds a game, you know, in a college. Mm. So I kind of like this idea of what they're doing, but it's just another mechanism to get more efficient shots, to get, you know, the spray three, to get open looks for guys, to get more opportunity for all these guys. And I think everyone's going to be motivated, yeah. Right? If it's a freewheeling offense, but also if you're allowed to go chase offensive rebounds, and again, try to get offensive rebounds that lead to easy buckets for you and your teammates, man, if you're a hungry offensive player, like this should be a fun offense to play in. Mm-hmm. and a fun defense to play in as well. If that's going to be the case, if it's really going to be up tempo and chasing offensive rebounds the whole time.
James, we were talking earlier, with Tristy Rodriguez of NBC Sports Bay Area. And, you know, we were talking about some of the things that we're looking forward to. Obviously, tonight, everybody's looking forward to DeMar DeRozan. We want to see him in that Kings uniform and what that looks like. But she brought up a player that I think I've heard you talk about as well, and I kind of forgot about. And I do want to see what this guy's looking like, and that's Jalen McDaniels. You know, it seems like he may be one of these guys that Mike Brown, from time to time, whether he's a head coach or an assistant coach, takes on as a little bit of a project and sees something in this guy, you know, physically, like, hey, he's, you know, 6'8", 6'9", he's athletic, he's strong, he's quick or whatever. I think with my teaching, I could turn him into this type of player or this type of defender or something like that. And I'm anxious to see if that's the way he's looking at Jalen McDaniels and what he sees for him and how much he's going to play, how much opportunity he's going to get, because the idea of a 6'8", 6'9", guy that's athletic, can move, all this other stuff, can jump, that seems like exactly what the Kings are needing. But we haven't seen it on the NBA level production-wise from him, so we don't know if he's even capable of it. But in theory, that's exactly what they're looking for, and I wonder the opportunity he may get tonight and in the preseason to show what he can do.
Yeah, I think tonight, preseason, he's going to get a lot of opportunity just because, I mean, let's be honest, it's like the starters and then Malik Monk and Alex Len and Jalen McDaniels that are healthy for what could be like a second team. And then it's going to be kind of a free-for-all. This is the type of player the Kings have had the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. It's a player that clearly Monty McNair knows that he needs. So it's why we've seen Mo Harkless. It's why we saw KZ Akpala. It's why we saw Kessler Edwards. Like, these are all the same style of players. And I would say that of the group, you know, clearly Mo Harkless had one or two seasons early in his career where he was more of a scorer and got a lot of opportunity on that end. But McDaniel is one of those guys who, you know, there's a time where he averaged 10 points a game for Charlotte. Now it's a really bad team, and he was getting all kinds of opportunity, and he wasn't very efficient. But that doesn't change the fact that he was actually a ball player. You know, he averaged 1.2 steals per game. He was active. He brought a lot to the table before he got traded to Philadelphia. He also had a really bad experience last year in Toronto, where, like, he just couldn't figure out a way to crack the rotation, and his scoring was way down. He shot 34% from the field. He only hit 17% from three. Just really, really struggled to find his way and to get in, to break through and to get, you know, honest minutes. Mm-hmm. He's looking for, like, a much better situation here and wants to kind of rinse that out of who he was as a player. Mm-hmm. But you got to do it, right? And, like, I think that in the grand scheme of things, the idea of him is like a really, really good idea. You need these long athletic guys who can defend the two, the three, the four, and kind of move from one position to the next, positionless basketball players. It's just, he has to show that he can hit the open three and that he can defend at the highest level. And he can be a player that defenses stay honest on. Mm-hmm. Because if he can't prove that, then again, the defense shrinks and it really messes with spacing, and we end up having the same situation like a Kessler Edwards had or KZ or any of the other guys that they've had at that position, where it just, it doesn't really work because you can't play on the offensive end. Mm-hmm. But I would also point out that I think people forget that Mo Harkless played here, I don't know, was that 3 or 4 years ago? And when Mo Harkless started, the Kings were something ridiculous, like 20-8 or something. Like, that type of player is very valuable if you can get them in the right headspace and you can get them hitting their 3-point shots and really, like, in the right frame of mind. Maybe Mo Harkless is a little bit better defender than McDaniels, but either way, the idea of him is really a good thing. He needs to go out and prove that, you know, when he gets his opportunities, that he can be productive and part of a good basketball team.
Yeah, and thinking about Jalen McDaniels being here, it kind of throws a monkey wrench in my theory of Kevin Huerter playing the small forward, the backup small forward role, because if Jalen, you know, is doing what the Kings hope he can do and showing good signs of being a guy who's a rotational guy, now that spot isn't available. He's like your backup three. And you got Malik Monk there at the two. I don't know what happens to Kevin Huerter. I think, James, that would probably leave Jordan McLaughlin out on the outs, because I think Malik would maybe come in there as the de facto backup point guard. I think Kevin would still get an opportunity. And now at this point with Trey Lyles and Alex Len, now you're at your 10-man rotation. And I don't know if Jordan McLaughlin would get the playing time. But Do you feel like he's somebody that Mike Brown has in there? Is like, yeah, no, I want him to be part of the rotation. Talking about Jordan McLaughlin.
Yeah, I mean, I think in theory, yeah, but the fact is he hasn't played, you know, and that's really tough. Mm-hmm. And again, Kevin hasn't played and Trey Lyles hasn't played either. I would even say this, though, the way that you're kind of like piecing all that together, and like I can see a world where Mike goes back to Trey Lyles as a small ball five, especially against mm-hmm. smaller teams. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of teams don't play a natural center, backup center anymore. And that's kind of what Alex Len has run up against, that mm-hmm. there are certain games where he's not going to play, or at least he won't play in the first half while they're trying to do something different. I could see Trey at a small ball five. I could see him with McDaniel and Herter as the, you know, 3, 4, 5 off the bench.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
And the reason I think of that is because if you're going to play Herter at the three and he might be a little out of position there, I kind of want to have a long athletic defender with him. Mm-hmm. And so if you can piece it together where, you know, maybe it is McLaughlin and maybe it's with Malik Monk. I mean, we're talking about like a five man, like hockey swap. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be the case very often. Like this team is, you know, the last couple of years, they always wanted either De'Aaron Fox or Domantas Sabonis on the court. Mm-hmm. now they've got three of those guys. Yeah. So you want two of DeMar DeRozan, De'Aaron Fox, or Domantas Sabonis on the court at all times. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it makes it easier for that to happen. But then, you know, Keegan Murray's played himself into a situation where you want him on the court as much as possible, too. Yeah. There just aren't a lot of minutes. If players are healthy, there's just not a lot of minutes outside of, like, the core six, seven guys.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. We got James Hamm of the Kings Beat, of the Insiders, here on D'Lo and KC as the Kings are back home. Kings season isn't underway because Kyle says basketball isn't back yet, right? Like, basketball's not back. So
you can say whatever you want, Casey. It's your world. We're just living in it.
The Kings are playing at the Golden 1 Center tonight. I can't say that for sure. Going up against the Warriors, check them out on ESPN. We're going to come back. I want to talk with James about more of this Kings team, but, man, you know, James, the guy knows everything about the Sacramento Kings and the history of the Sacramento Kings, and they're about to kick off their 40th season in Sacramento. Crazy. It feels like they just had the 30th anniversary. All of a sudden, here we are at the 40th anniversary. So we'll go down memory lane a little bit and also get you ready for this game tonight at the Golden 1 Center, man. It's D'Lo and KC. Just KC right now. My main man, James Hamm, rocking with me. It's ESPN 1320, Sacramento's number one sports station. D'Lo and KC here on ESPN 1320 as we wind down the day. Talking to my main man, James Hamm, here of the Insiders, of the Kings Beat. And we've been talking about the theme today has just been like the Kings are back. The Kings are back home. You know, city is really excited about everything that's going on. But this is also the start of the 40th season in Sacramento. 40 seasons. James, I was talking about how I'm born and raised in Sacramento. I don't know a Sacramento without the Kings. I can't imagine what this city would look like without the Sacramento Kings. And, you know, it's been a long road. Like, we've heard the story. You did a documentary on it. But, you know, the twists and turns of this team's tenure here in Sacramento, it seems like for one of the, not the only time, but for one of the few times in the 40 years, they seem like really settled as a franchise. And I don't mean that as far as like wins and losses, but just we're here. This is our arena. This is the owner. We're just settled and we're just operating. It seems like in the last, this time right now, this is one of the few times that's been the case in their 40-year history.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, they moved here before the 85-86 season. They played in Arco 1 for the first two, I think, first 3 years. They opened Arco 2 in 1988, and then it was just like a whirlwind. You know, I think the team was originally sold in 94 to Jim Thomas. Jim Thomas like considered relocating the team to Nashville, and they demanded like $70 million from the city, a loan for $70 million to help renovate the stadium, even though it was only at that point like 8 years old or something. Then they sell to the Maloose before the 98-99 season. So you're right, Kenny. Like, once the Maloose bought the team, it was nothing but you know, measures Q and R and the convergence plan and trying to get something else built. And this is the first time that I feel like what are we going on? This is year eight of Golden 1 Center. Yeah. It feels like this team does have their ownerships, you know, like solidified. They do have the arena is amazing and they're not going anywhere. There's no drama. There's no chaos. It's just about basketball, and the team is solid. We hope that they're good, but you know, the team is well built, and you know, ownership has been here for, you know, 10 years now. This is year 11 or year 12 for Vivek. I think his 2013-14 season's first year.
That's crazy. Yeah. It's that long. I don't feel like it's been that long, but he going on 15 years running this team. Yeah.
I know, this is my 15th year covering the team, which is crazy because that means that you know, the first 25 years, but like I've been around for the next 15. And it's totally bizarre to like think of it that way, that, you know, when I started this, my oldest was like, I want to say he was six. And my youngest was 2. Wow. And now one's 21 and one's 17. Wow. And yeah, it just like goes by super fast. But it, I think we should sit back and enjoy this season. I hope that year 40 is a good one in Sacramento. I hope that, you know, there's an upward ascension because fan base deserves it. And, you know, they have put in the time and the money to like make this thing right this season. Mm-hmm. And so year 40, it's a big one. And, you know, I'm excited to get the pin that they give out on opening night every year. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, it's been a battle, and it's good to see sort of some continuity of ownership, continuity of franchise, continuity of coaching and players. It's a good thing.
Yeah. And this team that you talk about, like hoping that, you know, they're on the upward trend or whatever, this feels like it's not the only time. But I would say maybe a handful of times in that 40 year, there's a certain level of expectation from the fan base. It's not just, oh, just go out there and play hard and, you know, we'll cheer for you. Like, these fans this year, they're expecting, you know, playoff success. Not only making the playoffs, but playoff success. And that type of expectation doesn't happen often in this city with this franchise. I mean, I'm sure it probably happened 2 or 3 years, you know, during the early 2000s. Maybe after the 96 season, they expected something, maybe.
Yeah, I would say the 94-95 season is the year that they missed the playoffs on the final day of the season, right? What, did they lose to Denver?
Denver,
I think that's what happened. And then Denver
got beat up against Denver.
Yeah, right. And then the next season, they have the same exact record. I think they're 31-43, and they end up making the playoffs with Gary St. Jean. And that's when you like felt like something good was happening, and then it went away super quick.
Super,
you know, quick. Like Brian Grant decided to leave, and like it like everything fell apart super quick. And that's really like up until, you know, the couple of years leading up to the pandemic when things got a little lean here, that's really the only time when there was like major disappearing of fans for years. So I do remember a world, Kenny, where there was no Kings in Sacramento. I'm old enough to remember that world. It wasn't cool. Most people here were Lakers fans because the Lakers were the best team, and and it was the Lakers and Celtics. But you know, like there was a world without it. But I think the cool thing is now we've got a 40-year window where it's been Gary Gerald calling every single game and just being such a beacon of everything in Sacramento, and it's just, it's a miracle that not only have we been blessed with having, you know, Kings basketball for 40 years, but we've been blessed with having one of the best radio voices there ever was for 40 years as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things when you get 40 years in, like I know a lot of people will say, oh, they came from Kansas City and they were, you know, Rochester and, you know, and all this other stuff, and Cincinnati, and they got all these different origins. When you're in one place for 40 years, not saying you get rid of your lineage that way, but this is the Sacramento Kings. Like this is Sacramento's franchise at this point. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like I said, I was born before the Kings were in Sacramento, but I don't remember anything. I might have been 1.5, maybe 2 years old. And it's not like you were a grown man, James Hamm, but I just, what did people do out here before the King? Like, what did they do? Who did they follow? Did they follow sports? Like, what did they do? I guess maybe, was it college? I don't know. What did people do before the Kings?
No, this has always been a huge baseball town, and that's why I think baseball is going to do tremendous here next season when the A's, you know, drop in. This is a huge, huge baseball town, and people forget, like, there's half of a stadium built in the on the Arco property for a baseball stadium. Like, there's the whole lower bowl of a baseball stadium built. They made a push for the A's in the early 90s. They made a push for the Raiders and almost had the Raiders. And at the last second, Al Davis asked for a controlling interest of the Kings. So they backed out of the deal and said, no, we're not doing that. So like, this has been a region that's missed out just by a hair, like so many times. And when the Kings moved here, like, look, I was like growing up, the PA announcer was Fred Anderson, who, you know, of course, Scott Moak has been the PA announcer for a long time. And Fred was a deacon at my church in Grass Valley. He also called Nevada Union football games for years and years. So I was kind of like raised with someone I knew that was there. And I remember my dad taking me to my first game. We walked down and we said hi to Fred. I graduated high school with his daughter. We're still friends. And, you know, those are the memories that I have early on. It's, you know, Gary Gerald, it's Jerry Reynolds as a coach, Jerry Reynolds as a GM. You know, the chaos of Ricky Berry, the Bobby Hurley accident. Like, those are the things that, like, I grew up on as part of, like, your fandom. And, you know, we're waiting for that moment where only good things happen to the Kings. And they had that window for 8 years where a lot of good things happened for the Kings. But I think we're ready for another window like that.
Yeah, I think so too, man. And just talking to you and thinking about it, like, it's crazy. This really is the only time where it's just been settled. It's just been, I mentioned it just a second ago, but it's just been, you have ownership, you have an arena. There's always been, and you're not going anywhere, right? So, like, it's always been one of those three components circling around the franchise. Like, oh, you got a new owner. Okay, we got a new owner. Well, you got to get a new arena. Well, if you don't get a new arena, then they might leave. And, yeah, Joe Davidson was talking about it earlier. Kings aren't going anywhere. Golden 1 Center is here until my kids are my age, at the very least. Like it's here for a long time, and that means the Kings are here for a long time.
Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere, and I think we're going to start hearing some more news about some acquisitions of properties around the arena that are taking place right now, from what I've heard. The potential for more 4- and 5-star hotels around the arena, which would go sort of play into the idea of a baseball stadium going across the way as well, whether it's in West Sac or it's somewhere else in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. That I think that we're on the cusp of something. And, you know, like, I'll say this, like, I as far as like reporters and like, I've been on as hard on Vivek Ranadive as anyone. Just like throughout my career, like there are moments that we've had with him that, like, as an owner, like, he's made some missteps. Mm-hmm. But if you step back and you take your kids to a game and you get out of the parking garage and you walk up to that arena and you see all that's been built up around it, you mm-hmm. see, you know, the Sawyer Hotel and that whole courtyard. And if you can remember back to what that area looked like when it was the downtown plaza, which I helped build, many years ago, I was an apprentice on the downtown plaza build. Like, if you look at what it looks like now versus what it was before, and how much he and his group of owners and you know, that ownership group has done to rebuild that area, it's just remarkable. And the fact that a Major League Baseball team is going to park itself in West Sac for 3 years, and that's Vivek. Yeah. And we can, you know, you don't want to get all into the mud as to what's happening there with the A's and everything else. But, like, look, there's something to, like, delivering. Yeah. And, you know, especially after dealing with the Maloofs for all those years, who would never deliver anything. Mm-hmm. There's something to, you know, even the way that Oakland is losing their last professional team. And again, you can look at bad ownership that is just like absconding with a team, but like, that's not what you have here in Sacramento. You've had an owner who saved it to help save a team. You have a owner who's trying to build up more of the city, who's trying to bring Major League Baseball here. And so there's so many positives here when it comes to what's happening with the team and what's happening with downtown Sacramento and how they're trying to continue to make this into a big time major league city.
Yeah. I mean, James, you know, as well as anyone, being downtown, working at Copeland's, all this, I couldn't imagine what is there today. I couldn't imagine the way, all the way from, really, you can stretch it out to Old Sac, because Old Sac has something, the Ferris wheel and all this other stuff. Like, I went to Old Sac one night on a random Friday. There were so many people out there, like families, like, hey, let's hang out. Like, from Old Sac all the way to the convention center, I couldn't imagine what it looking like it does right now, 25 years ago. It was desolate. It was all bad. It was no place you wanted to be. And just living through that right now, I mean, it's amazing to see in Vivek and the people who, you know, own the different buildings around there. They got so much to do with that. And like you just mentioned, they're not finished, it doesn't seem like.
No, and that's the thing. Like, you have to see the vision. And not only that, but what's been realized. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the amazing thing. Like, yeah. What was there and what's there now? Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to talk about building, you know, a $12 billion stadium complex on the Oakland Howard Terminal. It's one thing to talk about that stuff. It's a whole other thing for someone literally to rip up the heart of downtown, which was dying, and put in a brand new heart. They transplanted a brand new heart into the downtown Sacramento, and it's helped, like, even with the pandemic, it's helped that area thrive. Yeah. And just think, if there wasn't a pandemic, what that area would look like now, if it wasn't for the fact that we shut down that whole entire area for 2 or 2.5 years.
Right.
It's just really, really remarkable what's been accomplished here. And that's where, when we talk about 40 years in Sacramento, I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, they're going to be here. You have everything moving the right direction. They're still trying to expand and build and do better and do more things downtown to help, you know, build this thing out. And I mean, I saw today, I was surprised the Kings franchise is listed at $3.3 billion.
He bought it for what, $550 million?
11 years ago, he bought it for a valuation of $535 million. And of that, they didn't even get all that money because they had debt, they had all kinds of things. And but like, that's what the valuation of the Kings were. And it's not just because all teams have gone up in the NBA. Mm-hmm. It's because he built a just monstrous complex downtown Sacramento and really gave the franchise something to build on.
Yeah.
And stability. So yeah, really, really cool stuff.
Yeah. And you mentioned it, and the heart of it all is the Sacramento Kings. And like we've been saying all day long, they're back in town tonight. We talked about DeMar DeRozan. We talked about Jalen McDaniels. Is there anything else that you're kind of looking forward to? I wish Devin Carter was playing. You know, it's always fun to watch the rookies, you know, in their first shot at some NBA action. So we're gonna have to wait for that. Last year, you know, we saw Kobe Jones and we were kind of impressed by some of the things he was doing. Is there anything else outside of, you know, obviously DeMar that you're looking for and watching in this game tonight?
Yeah, I want to see the functionality of the starting group with Keon Ellis. That's something that I really want to see. I want to make sure, like, what we see from Malik is he's 100% and that his knee's right, because they did sit him the entire summer and he's working his way back. So I want to see that.
Real quick, James, on that, I don't want to lose that point. Has he said anything about, you know, I'm still trying to get my groove back, or like, has he said anything about his status coming into training camp?
No. But Mike's talked about how, you know, like, it took a couple of, like, the first practice or two for him to burn off some of the rust because he hadn't played. He hadn't been cleared really to do on-court stuff throughout the summer. So there's that, right? And then on top, like, I want to see a couple of these young guys. I want to see, can Mason Jones make a push for the final roster spot? Can Scalabissiere make a run? Can you know, someone like Isaac Jones make an impression? We keep hearing about what he's doing at practice. What does it look like when you're up against, you know, pros that aren't your friends, that aren't on your team? What does it look like when that happens? Mm-hmm. And so there are certain players that I want to see. You know, is Terry Taylor a ball player? Can he make this roster? You know, there are all of these, like, little elements that you're kind of just intrigued to see what they look like in functionality. You know, I think we're going to see the starters in the first half, the starters and the sort of the rotation, the 8 or 9 guys. Right. And then in the second half, I think it's going to be a lot of the young guys going out there and showing what they've got. And I think the one thing I love about Mike Brown is that if you get an opportunity with him and you play the right way and you play hard and you show that you belong, mm-hmm. he's willing to give you another opportunity. And that's how Keon Ellis worked his way into this lineup. And if I'm, you know, these guys that are from like 13 to 21 on the roster, I'm looking at that as like my way into this team. If I go out there and it's just not like play like your hair's on fire or push somebody around or go score a bunch of points, show that you can, you're a bucket. That's not what it's about. Go out there and play the right way, play with the right passion, the right intensity. Mike will give you another opportunity to show that that's who you are. And that's something that, again, Keon Ellis took full advantage of that. If it wasn't for a couple of bad blowouts early in last season, we might not see Keon Ellis. But yeah. when you show Mike that that's who you are, that you're going to follow the basic tenets of who they want you to be as a player, he usually rewards that. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see what happens.
And you know what? He'll reward that, and it doesn't always have to happen right away. Like, I think of a guy specifically like Boogie Ellis. I feel like he's a Mike Brown type player, and I think he's going to show that in the preseason. And that may not lead to him being on the team this year. They may look at him and be like, no, let's get him down to Stockton. Let's develop him. And he may be somebody that they take a year, kind of like they did with Keon Ellis, to bring up and you know, have in their program. But those things can happen starting like right now.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, for all the times that we talk about like the past and like, you know, we mentioned the 95-96 season, right? Mm-hmm. For as much as Brian Grant was so fun, right? So it was so amazing. And it was like, oh my gosh, look, the Kings have this crazy young power forward that looks like young Karl Malone. I think people remember back to that time that the other guy was Michael the Animal Smith. Yeah. And that's what you're looking for. Like somebody go out there as a second round pick or an undrafted player, go out there and just make it so they don't have another choice but to play you.
Yeah.
And there's potential for that. So I'm excited to see it.
No doubt. No doubt. James Hamm, he's going to be in the building. We're all going to be watching 7:30 tonight, ESPN. Check out the Kings back in action. DeMar DeRozan makes his debut as a Sacramento King. Can't wait to see that, man. I want to give a big shout out to my man James Hamm for pulling up on me like he always does. Tristy Rodriguez for pulling up. Joe Davison, Mark Jones, my man Coach JT. We had a good time. D-Lo, hopefully he'll be back tomorrow, but if not, we'll hold it down. We'll be talking about this game and getting ready for the Niners-Seahawks tomorrow. That's going to be crazy. But, yeah, it all gets started tomorrow. ESPN 1320, 10 a.m. with the Insiders. Check us out. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Vamos, Kings. They are back. We got Run It Back, and we got Dodgers Padres coming up. Y'all be good. I'm out of here. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable?
Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.